Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown, and the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs, the football man of the Chicago Tribune and a longtime contributor to our show in this station and a valued friend, and he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, obviously, the game is upon us, and we are looking at the Bears as they search for their first victory. And it was not surprising, but it was very interesting the way the kind of national media took the story of Ben Johnson kind of calling out the practice habits, not championship caliber, and everybody seemed to be commenting upon it. Now, by all accounts, he said that to the team before he said it to the media, and we know coaches always use the media to their end. How will that impact the Bears? How has it impacted them? Do you think they're on call at this point?
No, I don't think anybody's on call. Listen, this struck a chord nationally because how many times have you heard the coach say, "We had a good day of practice." More often, probably a great day of practice, and then on Fridays, you know, we had a great week of preparation. So, you know, the Bears had an alarming record after the coach declared they had a good or great week of practice going. So Ben Johnson mixed it up. I just think he is trying to raise the standard on a daily basis for every step of the way on game day, on each day of preparation during the week as the players try to hone in. So, yeah, you know, I don't think we're going to see something dramatically different Sunday simply because he chided the players for lacking championship practice habit.
When DJ Moore says that it prompted players to, quote, just go out there and prove him wrong, what do you think that says about the reaction to Ben Johnson's declaration?
I don't think they had a group of guys out there half-assing it before he told them that they didn't have championship practice habits. Like, listen, they went hard Wednesday, okay? They practiced indoors in the Walter Payton Center yesterday, which was certainly a little bit unusual for what was a warm, sunny day. So it's like, well, why are they practicing inside? It's a home game. It's on grass. Thursday is their weigh-in day. The players got to weigh in on Thursdays when they report. And, you know, guys that are overweight, there's a fine, right? Well, they practiced outdoors Wednesday. They went hard. They showed up Thursday morning to weigh in. And a bunch of guys, I guess, had dropped some weight. So in order to practice in a cooler environment, because it was warm out yesterday afternoon, they practiced inside yesterday. You know, you got to take care of your players' bodies. You got to take care of them physically. So, yeah, they went hard Wednesday. I still think we're probably overanalyzing.
You think everything. He didn't mean it?
DJ?
No, Ben Johnson. I mean, are you saying he said it for effect?
No,
or?
I'm sure he did mean it, but like, I also don't think they had guys that were, you know, mailing it in week two, week three, for a new head coach. I don't like. I think they've had execution problems in the games. I know they have. And we're in the weeds here now, right?
I don't know. I think it's significant. I think when you have your head coach calling out your players after he told them that privately, I don't think it's insignificant.
This would be really big if he was calling out a position group or a player,
right,
like
right.
He's saying, like, this like the whole team.
Brad,
like,
they haven't had a coach talk this way since Lovie Smith.
Tell me the last time Lovie said something like that too. They maybe haven't had a coach like that has talked like this since Ditka.
Okay, when I say that since Lovie Smith, probably in terms of just respect level, somebody who commands respect when he says things because he means what he says.
Yeah. Well, and you know, we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But who's gonna? Are you gonna draw the? Are you going to connect the dot from a win Sunday to him saying they lack championship practice habits?
Probably. If they play hard, yes, absolutely. You call out your team publicly and you go out and you win on Sunday, there's a direct line between the two.
Well, they lack, in terms of if you're talking about championship level stuff, they lack more than just the practice habits.
Brad, Tyreek Stevenson has a 158.3 passer rating against. In other words, quarterbacks that pick on him have a perfect passer rating. So that would seemingly indicate that maybe he is not equipped to do the things he's expected to do against the quality of receiver he's going against. Certainly, many a corner has run into problems with Jalen Jefferson, with Amon-Ra St. Brown, and with C.D. Lamb, frankly, or George Pickens. So I think that it's going to be fascinating to see, and I don't want to say how he plays, but how he's deployed. Can he do what they're asking of him? I know that the defensive coordinator doesn't want to talk about the past and how they got there, but the reality is, I know he said that he's never really worked with Jalen Johnson and didn't have him in the preseason, but he thought he was going to have him. Now that you know you don't have him, do you acknowledge that you're doing stuff that can't be done by this guy? Are you trying to figure out how to protect him? Are you going to try to play more zone? Are you going to – we got to get to the quarterback? But if you try to get to the quarterback and you can't get stuff on the back end, we're going to have guys running through the defense and scoring touchdowns again. I mean, what is the dilemma that the defensive coordinator faces when a player has that statistic going against him?
Yeah, well, I mean, Dennis Allen's kind of in between a mystery and an enigma here in terms of how he's going to fix things in the secondary. I saw that Tyreek Stevenson stat. I've seen a different number at other places that wasn't quite as high, but was in the 150s. Like, we don't need a stat to know that he's played poorly. We've seen it. Tyreek should be a really good fit for people talking about what Dennis likes to do in terms of playing press man coverage. He's a big physical corner, strong. He's got length. What he struggles to do is chase fast wide receivers from one side of the field to the other, like we saw him have to try to do against the Detroit Lions. So do they go to more zone? Like, listen, Dennis Allen isn't strictly press man. Like, he's very multiple in what he's done. Do they go with more too high stuff to try to prevent plays over the top, to allow the DBs underneath to be aggressive with the technique, with their leverage, and force Dak Prescott to try to throw the ball in the tighter windows? I think that's a possibility. The pass rush hasn't been there whatsoever. And so in any dissection of a defensive back, I think you've got to point that out, that they talk about the marriage of the pass rush and the coverage. Well, and like, it, how it's been a divorce of those two for the Bears, right? Like, they haven't worked together. They don't have a replacement that I see right now where you say, well, maybe they'll give Tyreek some time off here. He's going to have to play his way out of this. Do they add a new piece to the mix this week? I don't know. They've got Dallas Flowers on the practice squad. Ton of experience in San Francisco over the summer, starting for them during a bunch of training camp. We'll see. Tyreek's got to be better. The pass rush has to be better. And I'm sort of curious to see how Dennis reacts, at least this week, against a team with a couple great wide receivers, veteran quarterback. Plan's going to change week to week. What does Dennis have cooked up for Sunday afternoon?
What does Matt Eberflus have cooked up for Caleb Williams? I think that maybe that will be something that balances out because of their knowledge, mutual knowledge of each other. At the same time, if Matt Eberflus, out of character perhaps, comes at Caleb Williams with a little bit more pressure than he's accustomed to sending, then I think that could be a potential issue for the Bears.
Yeah, well, no, it's what does Matt Eberflus have up his sleeve? Remember that comment? It was like halftime of the Panthers game.
Yeah,
it's what does he have up his sleeve? I think Matt Eberflus will try to keep Caleb Williams in the pocket. Like that's what you want to accomplish with him right now. That's what the Detroit Lions set out to do in that game last week after seeing him run the ball in that opener against the Vikings. Like, I think I mentioned to you guys, I talked to Josh Metellus, the Vikings safety, and he said he thought Caleb was faster than he was as a rookie. So the Lions saw what he was able to do. They said, we want to try to keep him in the pocket, make him a pocket thrower, which he was better at this past week. No question, Caleb was better as a pocket thrower against Detroit. Bears wound up scoring 21 points. I think Eberflus would be happy to keep Caleb in the pocket. But they've got the same issue going on in Dallas in terms of no pass rush, no coverage, no good defense.
This segment with Brad Biggs is sponsored by Estwing Professional Tools, made in the USA for over 100 years. If you're looking for a positive out of the Bears season thus far, and you're searching maybe, how about the fact that they have scored a touchdown on their opening drive in consecutive games? And they struggled with that, we know, a year ago. Brad, you can't help but wonder why they can't do that coming out of halftime. And I know there was, you know, they didn't do the right job in the first game. In the second game, they had a penalty. I'm just curious, with the scripted plays, why can't they just script the whole game? Why can't they script every drive? Because what's happening hasn't been working after the opening drive.
Yeah, that's Well, I mean, the first issue is it's really hard to script it when you you don't know what type of situation you're going to be in terms of down and distance, where you're at on the field, things of that nature. I think Declan Doyle was asked about scripting the plays for when they come out of the third quarter,
right?
Which is an interesting idea. You know, sometimes they will pay particular attention to the first 10, first 15, whatever it is. Those get highlighted during the practice week. Okay, so there's a reason why maybe they're dialed in on them in terms of going over them in walkthroughs, going over them in practice, the whole nine yards. Probably not enough snaps in practice during the week to script yourself 65 to 70 plays. So that would be an issue. But I agree. Absolutely encouraging how they've been able to open the game and look in sync and move the ball. Like last year, not only were they not scoring, you were getting three and punt. So to see that has been certainly encouraging.
The Soldier Field record for longest field goal, I believe, is 59 yards. With Brandon Aubrey in town Sunday, is that in danger?
Well, that's a good question. Does Brian Schottenheimer have a fourth and three or less? Is he? Yeah, are they going to go for it? Like you see these coaches now, they just keep their foot on the gas. I think Matt Prater is one of two guys to hit from 59. He was with Detroit. I want to say that was 2015 or 2016. Kicked for Buffalo last night.
This dude hit from 64 yards last week. With the game on the line. Did.
Former college soccer player, Brett. Yes. They say those guys are geniuses.
Yeah. He's really, really talented. It'll be interesting to see what we've got in terms of weather. I think there's a chance for some rain this weekend. I don't know if there's going to be some wind with that. But you know what? That'll be fun to just straight up watch during warm-ups pregame. In terms of what the outer range is and how he looks.
Montez Sweat has yet to have a sack. He is a very highly paid player. They gave up a second-round pick to get him, and then they gave him a $99 million deal, 98, whatever it was. What you hear always is that, well, he's on his own. You know, he's playing by himself. He's always double-teamed. Well, the reality is, I believe there was one actual double team in the game against the Vikings, and I think the Lions actually purposely doubled him five times. So that's six double teams in the first two games. And I know that they're, you know, he might be getting, I'm not counting him getting chipped or somebody. I mean, I understand the count might not be perfect, but the point is that he has yet to earn the salary he makes. And when we follow the money, it leads you back to the highest paid defensive player and the fact that that you're not getting the bang for your buck. How do you release him? How do you get him out of that? How do you help him? What do they need to do to get him playing better?
Yeah, it's a puzzle because he had a good training camp. Like I saw it, and it was a better training camp than we saw the previous summer. And he looked locked in. He was active, and that's yet to happen. He would have one sack had they not had offsetting penalties on that one play, but little production from him through two games. The sample size is still small, but that's concerning. Tremaine Edmonds, he's getting an awful lot of money to play the linebacker position. He needs to make more impactful plays. When your highest paid players are not some of your biggest contributors on a regular basis, it makes it more challenging to win football games. It's as simple as that.
All right, Brad, we got a minute. What's your pick?
Guys, I tried to talk myself into taking the Bears all week, looking at it and understanding that we have so many strong overreactions in the first week and two that it tends to kind of skew your vision. The Bears aren't going to be as bad as they were against the Lions. But as I looked at it and I considered the possibilities of what could happen, and understanding that the Bears' defense looked really terrible the last five quarters, and kind of meshing that with the fact that the defense looked pretty good without Jalen Johnson for all of training camp, Kyler Gordon for much of training camp, because it was going against that Bears offense, guys. And at the end of the day, I wanted to take them, but considering that and knowing that the Cowboys have the clear edge in quarterback in terms of experience, production, things of that nature. I mean, you guys heard Ben Johnson. I think you guys brought it up, Dave. Ben Johnson just sort of gushed about Dak Prescott the other day. I've got Dallas 35-30. The Bears have lost their last 48 or 49 games when the opponent has scored 30 or more points. They are more prepared to play in a shootout right now with their personnel than they have been. Hopefully the defense takes a significant step forward.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate it.
Have a good weekend, Brad.
Have a great weekend, guys.
That is our guy, Brad Biggs. He is the football man of the Chicago Tribune.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Spiegel and Holmes show flashback.
And the last thing, the most important piece, is we're going to take the North and never give it back.
Hope is alive in Chicago.
Ordinarily, we would be doing a segment with Jason Leisure, but Speaks is out today, and Jason was going to come downtown anyway. So he's sitting in for Speaks, but his segment... Yeah, you're here.
I just don't have my mic on, but I'm sponsored, baby.
You are sponsored by Busey Bank, building business, growing well since 1868. And by Plumbers 911, plumbing emergency. Call the plumbing professionals available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. The points that you made to Matt Bowen about the roster itself and the draft picks not being dressed, and it may be something that... Is a coach thing of the coach not wanting players to play because they haven't quite earned the opportunity to play. That being said, second round picks are supposed to start. Like, they're supposed to start. That's the lifeblood of any football team, are second round picks. And for the Bears to now be in a position where one of your second round picks is a swing tackle that you don't think is good enough to play. He's not going to play right tackle because you theoretically have your right tackle for the next few years. He's probably not going to play left tackle because he's not good at it. You have a slot receiver that you couldn't figure out a way to use in the first couple of games of the season that shows potential, but they haven't been able to do it. And then you have a defense that struggles. What does it say that Shamar Turner can't get dressed for a game if that's the defensive line that you're putting out there?
Yeah, and just so you're hearing this, right, Lawrence and I aren't expecting any of these first four draft picks, first and second rounders, to be immediate all pros. But for second round picks to be unsuitable to play, that can't happen. That is such a big red flag. I think if you want to have the conversation about the roster problems here, there are many. And you want to get into Ryan Poles' decisions that have led to this. In the interest of fairness and objectivity, that's so boring, right? But it matters to me.
Matters to me, too.
I know it does. I know. You have to start, before you start screaming, everybody, you have to start with the fact that Ryan Poles inherited an awful situation from Ryan Pace. A team that was stripped, that had so little talent. You remember when the Rams went all in and then went to the Super Bowl and won it?
Bleep them picks.
Yeah. The Bears did that to go 6-11 in 2021. So Ryan Poles takes over a team where, if I remember right, you're looking at that roster and you're saying there's maybe five guys you want to keep long-term off of this. And that shrunk very quickly when you have to trade Khalil Mack for draft picks. So deficient in talent, salary cap nightmare, and you have also compromised future draft capital. Ryan Poles in his first draft should have had, I think, the number five pick, and it ended up being the Giants pick as he's trying to start a rebuild. If that sounds familiar to you, it's kind of like the situation the Saints are in where you would right now, where you'd sit there and say, this team might need to burn it down for 2 years to even have a chance to rebuild. So that's the starting point. That's what Ryan Poles had to fix just to get level. And you get a 3-14 season to start the rebuild. But after that, I mean, they have not had a pass rush the entire time he's been here. And they're in year four. Dennis Allen is trying to solve the same problems that Matt Eberflus was trying to solve of how do you win without a pass rush? And that is almost the equivalent of how do I win without a quarterback on offense? I mean, you just can't. It undercuts all the good work you've done in the second and third level, if you've done good work, with linebackers and secondary when you don't have a pass rush up front. And I'm looking at this pass rush, Lawrence, and they have finally invested premium resources into it, but I don't know if they've invested it
in the right players.
Guys. You're looking at a starting defensive line that has Montez Sweat, $98 million deal, Grady Jarrett, $43 million deal, Dio Odengbo, $48 million deal, and then the fourth guy is a second-round pick, Javon Dexter. So those are all premium resources. That's what you'd want them to use to address a problem. But there was no pressure, no pass rush in that game against the Lions. And I know the Lions have a good offensive line, but most teams have a good offensive line.
I mean, they had to reconstitute their offensive line too.
The Bears have to get past this complex of looking at whoever is really good and be like, well, what can we do? Oh, we can't. We can't compete with Aaron Rodgers. We can't compete with Detroit's. No, those teams play in your league. You're not a 1AA school going to play Bama.
Roll Tide and High Tide.
You go through the rest of their defense, and you're looking at Tremaine Edmonds as their fourth highest paid player. And that was chosen as, I don't know about an upgrade but at the time, but it was probably thought of by the Bears as a suitable replacement for Roquan Smith.
Yeah, and they thought they were going to get two linebackers for the price of one Roquan.
Mm-hmm.
And people know I was hot about that, and I still continue to be hot about that. Because all Roquan did was go get his money in Baltimore and be an all-pro.
We all hated that because there's times where, you know, the team knows more than you do about a guy. Roquan, we all saw. We all knew. There was no mystery about how good that guy was. And then a respected organization happily gave up draft capital and paid him exactly what he wanted. The Ravens don't make a lot of mistakes.
And they've been rewarded with a guy who's been an all-pro since he's been there.
And he's been phenomenal. You look at their secondary, I had thought for sure that corner, I mean, that is probably one of the biggest successes of the Ryan Poles era, is inheriting a team that had almost nothing at corner. And now, last year, had probably six starting caliber corners, in my opinion. You go into this year, they find Nashawn Wright. It looks like he's a starting caliber corner. And he did have the pick six in the first game. But, I mean, where was that? You would think that a group that deep could weather losing Jalen Johnson and Kyler Gordon a little better than that.
Well,
those are hard guys to replace. You don't have an equivalent of those guys. But now I'm looking at, I mean, do they have to play Kyler Gordon on the outside when he comes back? Can you trust Tyreek Stevenson at all? Josh Blackwell, who I thought was a starting caliber backup at nickel, is not maybe Dennis Allen's guy, and he's starting Nick McLeod. He's using Nick McLeod in that role. I mean, there's just question marks up and down the defense, and that is the biggest point I want to make on this is that defense is no longer under construction. That is supposed to be a final product.
Well, now you take the injuries into account where TJ Edwards is gone, Jalen Johnson is gone, and Kyler Gordon hasn't been available for them. I try not to blame the back four for the problems of the front four. Mm-hmm. And I do think that when healthy, the Bears have a very elite back four. Them being not healthy right now is not great. But the fact that you're not getting pressure makes their job a lot harder. It makes them look worse than what? I was saying this to Spiegs a couple days ago, that when I look at Jervon Dexter, and I felt like on draft night, I was like, that's weird. A guy who's kind of a five technique, you're kind of asking him to play three technique, and he doesn't seem to fit what it is that you want to do. With great pass rushers, forget about what it is that how they go about getting to the quarterback. They get there. You see it. And you don't have to wait. And I feel like there's been a lot of turning your head sideways and squinting with Jervon Dexter for people to see what they want to see. And what I see is a guy that is clearly talented, but not to the point where he can be, he's not a force. And he needs to be a force. And by now, you should have seen it play out where he is a force.
In year three.
And he's not that. And I worry about all of this. All of this is us talking about the evaluation process of Ryan Poles and his entire staff and the choices that they make. And sometimes it's a matter of looking at where are your deficiencies as a football team and did you help them? The Bears clearly have a deficiency at running back, and it was not addressed. And I know that there are a lot of fans of Kyle Manungai, and I think in a vacuum, sure, it's a really interesting project. But this was a draft where there were quality running backs that were available before you got to the seventh round, and you didn't take them. And you didn't look, and then when free agency came around or came back around, you didn't go out and look and say, well, is there anyone else that we can add that could just be competition? And now you look at the Bears running back room and go, it's one of the worst position groups in the NFL is their running back room.
And your best running back, the guy at the top of that list, is a guy that I don't know if your head coach
likes him.
Really wants. I would say I don't think he would have chosen him. I think we know he wouldn't have chosen him because he was on Detroit's staff. He was the offensive coordinator when they traded DeAndre Swift for, I think, a fourth round pick. The Bears were saying after the draft, I mean, none of this, by the way, is revisionist history on my part, like going back and second guessing something that I thought all this was strange at the time with their draft. And it was clearly Ben Johnson asserting himself in the personnel department, going with a tight end at number 10 and a wide receiver with Luther Burden in the second round. The Bears were saying after, you know, there were running backs that they liked, and just each time it was just, they were just a couple of picks off. Somebody snatched the guy that they wanted before they had a chance. That didn't have to be that way if you genuinely prioritized it. If you went into your draft and said, hey, there are problems on this roster at left tackle, defensive end, and running back, you can take care of one of those line of scrimmage spots with the number 10 pick. And I think they probably would have if Calvin Banks had lasted another pick to them at 10. And then you can attack running back with one of those 3 second round picks. But when you go tight end 10 and then Luther Burden wide receiver with the next second round pick, and you've done nothing now at that point to do offensive tackle and defensive line, well, then that's what you end up spending those picks on instead of running back.
And the left tackle thing is an issue too. Like, you talk about this all the time, the concept of Bears good. Like, good enough for the Bears.
Braxton Jones, if you look it up in the dictionary, he's there. That's it.
He's Bears good.
Awesome developmental story, really. You have that team in the position it was in 2022 to go find a guy in the fifth round. out of Southern Utah, no less. I don't even know what their team name is. And develop him into a serviceable NFL player of any kind is a huge developmental win. It's not necessarily what is like a championship level or a contending level left tackle.
But even if you were going to, like, let's say that you had targeted Ozzie Trapillo, and it now makes me wonder, like, is this the Boston College connection all over again? And if you were going to target him, knowing that he played right tackle, and I've heard the story, and I think that it's great, him being a great teammate, he had to play right tackle because there was another guy that couldn't play right tackle. You could kind of only play left. Okay, great. You knew that it would be a project. And are you supposed to be drafting a project while you're out signing Joe Tooney?
Right.
I don't
in
think
year
those,
four of a rebuild,
right,
when you won five games last season.
I don't think those two decisions match up very well. When you say, well, here's a project. Well, what about left tackle? Well, we kind of have a guy that's okay, and maybe he'll be better because we're better, quote-unquote, guard to guard. And Jonah Jackson's had a really rough first two games.
Yeah.
Really rough.
There was a lot of trust us on this.
Yep.
After Sean McVay said, we talk about teams that know what they're doing. After Sean McVay said, okay, yeah.
Yeah, you got him. Yep. Yeah. We don't need him. We're going to go in a different direction.
And Ben Johnson had him in Detroit, and Ben Johnson comes in with ultimate credibility.
Didn't he have him at a different position, though, in Detroit?
Yeah. Here's how I...
That's what I'm saying. Like, what are we doing?
Here's how I evaluate the draft. If you're picking high first round, you're wanting those guys to be all pros. First round in general, you're looking for quality starters. Second round, you're looking for pretty good starters. When you get into third, fourth, and fifth, if you find guys that can play at all, I think that's good. And then sixth and seventh is our lottery tickets, basically.
And it just feels like to me that Ryan Poles revels in the, well, look at this guy that I happen to find in the fifth round or seventh round. Congratulations, man. You got a guy that ended up making a team. You also have a bunch of guys in the third round that haven't made a team. Can you just get the ones and the twos right? Could you, and an occasional three, can you get those right before you go patting yourself on the back for the deep dive that your scouting department did to find some random six rounder that ends up making your roster? It's frustrating. And it's frustrating when it plays out on Sundays the way that it does, where you go, these are guys that you were supposed to have faith in you drafting, and they can't even put their uniforms on in week two, which means, and if it is an issue of guys are not given what they need to give in practice, that means that your scouting department failed again. It means that you scouted guys that weren't coachable. If you're walking in and they're not good enough in practice to take jobs that are available, that yep. means your scouting department got it wrong.
If you draft someone in the second round or higher, you're expecting that person to be a day one starter.
Correct.
They should walk in and be a starter. So when they're drafting Ozzie Trapillo, they're thinking starting left tackle at that time. Now he can't beat out Braxton Jones or Theo Benedict,
which is wild.
An undrafted player who played college football in Canada last year.
Which is wild.
Or 2 years ago, rather. He was undrafted last year, spent the whole season on the practice squad. Ben Johnson trusts him more than the guy they spent a second round pick on, what, 6 months ago?
It's pretty crazy.
4 months ago?
It's depressing.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.
Raheemy Harrison Grody, middays 10 a.m. to 2 on 670 The Score.
Nice callback, Robbie Triano, Ray Diaz. Nicely done. This is Raheemy Harrison Grody on 670 The Score. Talking Bears, as we have for most of our show, did touch on the Cubs earlier. Of course, if you missed it, we did a best of the postgame celebration segment and also talked about them to start our show at 10. If you missed it, you can go back and listen on the rewind feature on the Odyssey app. And now we go back to more of what was said, and I think a pretty informative press conference availability at Halas Hall. You heard Jarrett Payton refer to it a little bit ago. But Ben Johnson said something where he gave us a timeline. And while it makes sense, it leads us asking a few more questions. So listen to what he said about when he thinks the team is going to play its best football.
There is a familiarity for a lot of guys in the locker room to the way the season has started, right? How do you kind of just keep a pulse on their mental state and keeping them focused on, look, it's a long season ahead. We have time to correct a lot of these things.
Yeah, I think they understand that. It is early in the season. There are a number of teams that have started the season not the way that they would like to, and yet they bounce back and they find a way to win. And we're going to be playing our best football in December. I know that to be certain. We're just in a race right now to get better in a hurry. And the faster we get there, the wins will start coming, and we'll be just fine.
So a couple of things for me. Number one, I expect a coach to say that about his offense when he's new to this team and it's in its first year. But number two, knowing that, would you call this season a rebuild even though the Bears are not?
I would not call this a rebuild. Here's why. I would call it a rebuild if you were getting a first-year quarterback and a whole bunch of parts that were brand new. And also, if the team were maybe a little bit younger, because this isn't the youngest group out there in the NFL.
No, they're the 10th oldest.
Exactly. And so knowing that, I have in front of me a team that was supposed to compete for a playoff spot. It just doesn't look like they're anywhere near close to competing for a playoff spot.
There's nuance to this. As you mentioned, they've spent a lot of money on some big contracts with people who are in their best windows of talent. Montez Sweat, for example. They pay Adio Odengbo what they're paying him because they expect him to produce in this window of talent for him. There's other players like DJ Moore, who they had extended, Cole Kmet, who they had extended, Jalen Johnson, those guys. And that's why I agree with you.
TJ Edwards.
I think that it's funny because it kind of goes back to the question about Matt Eberflus, where Caleb professionally answers that time was great. But the bottom line was, we all were asking ourselves last year, what was that year worth? Because in the Bears' theory, according to what they had planned, all they needed was to drop in the quarterback and make it work. But now you're starting to see, based on even that explanation, which I think is not out of the ordinary for us. That's when you would expect a group to come together who's learning a new offense. Ben Johnson says strip it down to the studs. But maybe that's the part in here too. Maybe that's where we should have realized this is going to be a little bit different than what we had expected before. I'm glad, though, that Jarrett said in our last segment that it is Ryan Pace's staff evaluation, that it's his talent that you're seeing. Is he going to try to fit that to the scheme? Yeah. Do I think he's done that so far? Not in an effective way. But you put yourself into a corner if your draft picks don't hit and you've got really expensive contracts that makes you commit to these players on the board.
That last part is how we got here, Ryan Poles, and
right.
Then what is the obstacle to keep us from being where we are right this second, and can you pivot? It's hard for them to pivot based on the contracts that they've given out. And That's why you have to let this play out, see how much better the offensive line can get, see if those guys on defense can become what you wanted them to become. Now, they're already behind the eight ball on defense because of the Jalen Johnson news, looking up
T.J.
Terrell
Edwards
Smith,
being injured, who was just extended.
Yeah, so a bunch of parts for that defense that was supposed to take, that was supposed to be a more ready-made situation for Dennis Allen than what's going on offense.
It was supposed to be.
But now the offense is way closer to being able to accomplish anything this season just by virtue of who is available. Ben Johnson, Ryan Poles, they got together. They decided this is what they want to do offense. They were the ones, you could say Poles was the one who made the picks, but Ben Johnson had a heavy influence. Why else would he take a tight end in the first round and then take a wide receiver in the second round?
Yeah, you're seeing positional redundancy, especially when you know they needed a running back and they didn't do so until the seventh.
Right. So Kyle Manangai, who might have to play a more substantial role this week just by virtue of a quad injury to the starter, DeAndre Swift.
Dear God.
And these are the reasons why I'm looking at it as it's not a rebuild. I wouldn't call it that. But what Ben Johnson said is not untrue. It's just having to actually live it out as opposed to saying, look, the Lions went 1-6. And when you have to live it day to day, week to week, and see how bad it can get, see week two, you have to kind of keep in mind, we knew it wasn't going to be anywhere close to a finished product. Are you willing to absorb the growing pains along the way? Or are you ready to already, after 2 weeks of football, jump ship and say, this can't work?
Or did you put yourself in a rebuild situation because you, once again, didn't get it right? Like, that's the other piece of this. And for whatever you want to say, the first year Ryan Poles was here, he physically said, I'm not calling this a rebuild. Those were the words out of his mouth. So that's why when people are like, oh, look at what he inherited and what happened in his first season. No, he decided to put Byron Pringle on that team. You know, he decided to go for N'Keal Harry and Alex Leatherwood.
He decided
that
to make
was his
trade
decision.
Too.
And he didn't want to call it a rebuild. And so, you know, don't revise history yet again. If we're in the middle of this and we still don't have a win-loss total that we want, and suddenly it's a rebuild then, I feel like this was specifically talking about when the offense should be better.
The offense is going to be better in December. I don't think it's going to take until December for it to be significantly better than what we've been seeing. That is, of course, if people don't get hurt, because I don't know what the depth looks like on offense either. Actually, I do know what some of those parts look like because I've seen them in
DeAndre
years past.
If DeAndre Swift is not available,
well, then it's Roschon Johnson and Kyle Manangai, right?
Or is it? I mean, the problem is they have to make DeAndre Swift being established in a game plan is what is crucial to the first drive, for example, working and resulting in a touchdown. That is a sobering thought if he's not available this week. But I'm not ready to do that yet. I want to see the updated Thursday injury reports first. We have more coming up here on Raheem Eaton Harris with Mark Grody on 670 The Score. Mark will join us from Halas Hall with quotes from Dennis Allen at 125. And coming up next, it's Danny Parkins. And I want to ask him about some of the national discussion surrounding Caleb Williams this week that we need his voice on.
Ah, those narratives, how they can quickly get away from you.
Yeah, we need Danny to bring in some of the actual, are you watching the games though? So we'll do that next on 670 The Score.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haugh on 670 The Score.
Bears coach Ben Johnson garnered national attention for the way he called out his team's practice habits.
I think our practice habits are yet to reflect the championship caliber team.
Do you expect that to pay off with a victory for the Bears on Sunday, or will they make Dak Prescott the offensive player of the week for the third week in a row as Bears opponent? Can you please give us the result with the score and what we'll be talking about on Monday morning?
I think we're going to be talking about the Bears' first victory. I think we're going to see something maybe we don't expect to see or have been waiting to see. But I do think that for a change, yeah, the presence of a Matt Eberflus defense will be the biggest reason that the Bears win. And you haven't been able to say that in a while. The Cowboys defense is arguably in worse shape than the Bears. And I know the Bears have given up more points than any defense in football, a product of the Lions who were fixated on embarrassing the coach who betrayed them. The Lions, what happened in Detroit was lopsided, humiliating, and just an old-fashioned blowout. And the Bears were embarrassed and should have been. It also reflects a team in the Lions that was driven to embarrass Ben Johnson. And they had been waiting for that moment all offseason. And they had more to play for because they were embarrassed themselves against the Packers. So I don't want to overreact to something what might go down as maybe the worst day of the Bears season. And then that may be true on January 19th as much as it is September 19th. The Bears can beat the Cowboys. They can get to Dak Prescott. They have all kinds of skill. I understand that. And the Cowboys are capable of picking on Tyreek Stevenson again. And Dak Prescott likely will be the NFC Offensive Player of the Week if things go according to his plan. 400 yards passing sounds realistic for him. But I think the Bears and Caleb Williams can move the football. Bears 34, Bears 34, Cowboys 31.
I don't want the point. I don't need the point. I'll take the point. Bears 31, Cowboys 30, way over the posted total of 50.5.
I thought are the Bears getting a point? I thought they were giving a point.
Bears are now getting a point, according to Circus Sports Illinois.
And what are we going to be talking about out of the game?
Thank you. We should both answer that part of the question. Maybe David did and I missed it. But the tight ends are going to get involved. Tight ends are going to be involved. That's, I think, going to be the storyline. Finally.
Brandon, who are you taking this game?
I'm taking Cowboys 28, Bears 25. What we're going to talk about is the development, though, of Caleb Williams. He's going to have a good game, though. Defense just fall flat.
See, I like that because I unfortunately, and I vowed I wouldn't do this. I think we're all 1-1 right now. But I think that I was kind of like, I'm not taking the Bears again till God knows when, till they actually win a game. And here I go again. I actually like this spot for the Bears. And it's crazy because the injury list didn't get any better. And there aren't many things that you really can hang your head on. It's just, I don't think the Giants are very good. And that game was on in the bar after the Bears game ended. And we were doing the post-game show, so I was kind of watching some of it. You know, the Cowboys got an unbelievable kicker, and we should get into talk about that because we have talked about it privately. It's such a great story. But that guy kicked a couple field goals, you know, that were extraordinary. Otherwise, they don't win that game. And I got to tell you, I look at where the Bears are at and how desperate they were and what the coach had to say, and everybody's on notice. And I feel like the offense is going to win this game for the Bears. I feel like they're going to score 31 points. I have it 31-29. It could go the other way very easily. But when I finally sat down and started doing some work on it last night, I have no idea why. I just felt a lot better about the Bears than I thought I would. And it makes zero sense. Maybe Big Z telling us that they're going to work in Theo Benedict. And I honestly don't even know if he can play. But they're just going to try to address some of the issues. You know, we were told yesterday that, I guess, Pro Football Focus says that that 77%, 77.8 or something, percent of the pressure is coming over the court, over the left tackle, which doesn't surprise me, but I didn't know he was even that bad. And then we talked about the horrors you're having in the secondary and Tyreek Stevenson, and I knew he was bad. I didn't know it was that bad. I just think it's probably not as bad as it looks. So I'm going with Dallas being just as bad as the Bears on defense, and this turning into a – I don't think the Bears can win this game unless they can score 27 points. And I'm going
You're not
going to
win many games.
They need a shootout. And that's why
they need a high-scoring game.
What is the over-under, 55?
50.5 now.
Oh, 50.5? Yeah, we're going way over
that. That seems low with these two defenses.
Yeah, we're going way over that.
It's ticked up, like, each day.
Yeah. I think the over is the bet. But I'll take the Bears in this one, too. And I'll tell you what, never again if they lose big.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hey, Chicago, it's Mully here.
And David Haw. We're always starting your day with the best Chicago sports talk. Mornings 5:30 to 10 on The Score.
And don't forget, if you miss the show live, you can always get us anytime on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch every show, every hour, every segment of Mully and Haw on demand.
It's so easy. Just open up your favorite podcast app, search Mully and Haw, and hit the follow button to get every minute of the show your way and on your time.